This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you for that, and welcome to Caboose, who just joined us. We're a light group again, but I believe we have enough to move forward. Excuse me. And so this is two calls in quick succession. I'm very grateful to the folks that have been able to make it. And let me restate in just a second what I hope to that we can pursue in this call. But first, even though the time is short between calls, let me ask if anybody has any statement of interest change that they want to note. Not hearing anything or seeing any hands, we can press on. A brief agenda for this call, I think, would go along the lines of that Bernie and I would continue reading the interim, the interim rules, just as we were doing the other day, so that we have within these two calls a complete reading of what the interim rules state. And then after that, to address suggested tweaks that we mentioned in the call on Tuesday and addressing any that might come up today. Three, to then talk about how to start approaching the issue of repose. It's my assumption that what we'll do with the interim rules is we won't be able to finish them on this call because of tweaks and allowing several days or such for people that are not on the call to weigh in. But taking into account that they've already had some time. And so then to finish those on list and perhaps to begin the issue of repose, at least in respect of how we plan to address it, how we plan to address going forward, and then finally maybe any administrative matters. And so unless anyone wants to make a comment or have a question in the interim, we're going to get started with the reading of the rules. And I will take advantage of Bernie's kind offer from the other day, which is continuing, and mention that we are up to Rule 10, and ask Bernie to go ahead and take Rule 10, and then I'll read, and he and I will alternate.
Glad to help out, David. All right. Let's find ourselves where we are. Okay. Interim Measures of Protection, Rule 10. A claimant may request interim from the IRP panel, or if an IRP panel is not yet in place, from the standing panel. Interim relief may include prospective relief, interlocutory relief, or declaratory or injunctive relief, and specifically may include a stay of the challenged ICANN action or decision in order to maintain the status quo until such time as the opinion of the IRP panel is considered by ICANN as described in ICANN Bylaws, Article 4, Section 430IV. An emergency panelist shall be selected from the standing panel to adjudicate requests for interim relief. In the event that no standing panel is in place when an emergency panelist must be selected, a panelist may be appointed by the ICDR pursuant to ICDR rules relating to appointment of panelists for emergency relief. Interim relief may only be provided if the emergency panelist determines that the claimant has established all of the following factors. 1. Harm for which there will be no adequate remedy if in the absence of such relief. 2. Either A. Likelihood of success on the merits, or B. Sufficiently serious questions related to the merits. And 3. A balance of hardships tipping decidedly toward the party seeking relief. Interim relief may be granted on an ex parte basis in circumstances that the emergency panelist deems exigent, but any party whose arguments were not considered prior to the granting of such interim relief may submit any opposition to such interim relief, and the emergency panelist must consider such arguments as soon as reasonably possible. The emergency panelist may modify or terminate the interim relief if the emergency panelist deems it appropriate to do so in light of such further arguments. David, over to you.
Thank you, Bernie. So that Rule 10 is on the floor. If anyone has a comment, question, concern, please go ahead and speak up now. And not seeing any hands or hearing any, let's press on to Rule 11, Standard of Review, which I will read through. I'm just taking one quick look again, okay? Standard of Review. Each IRP panel shall conduct an objective de novo examination of the dispute. A, with respect to covered actions, the IRP panel shall make findings of fact to determine whether the covered action constituted an action or an inaction that violated ICANN's articles or bylaws. B, all disputes shall be decided in compliance with ICANN's articles and bylaws, as understood in the context of the norms of applicable law and prior relevant IRP decisions. C, for claims arising out of the board's exercise of its fiduciary duties, the IRP panel shall not replace the board's reasonable judgment with its own, so long as the board's action or inaction is within the realm of reasonable business judgment. D, with respect to claims that ICANN has not enforced its contractual rights with respect to the IANA naming function contract, the standard of review shall be whether there was a material breach of ICANN's obligations under the IANA naming function contract, where the alleged breach has resulted in material harm to the claimant. E, IRPs initiated through the mechanism contemplated at Article 4, Section 4.3A, IV of ICANN's bylaws shall be subject to a separate standard of review as defined in the IANA naming function contract. End of Rule 11. So that is now on the floor. And before I ask for questions or comments, Brenda, can I ask if you're having any luck trying to get Caboose back into the meeting? Brenda may be off trying to get Caboose.
I believe she's not answering. That's what she's doing.
Okay. So let's hope that works out. So on Rule 11, are there any comments, concerns, questions? And not seeing hands or hearing any, we can go to Rule 12, Bernie, and over to you.
All right. Rule 12, IRP panel decisions. IRP panel decisions shall be made by simple majority of the IRP panel. If any IRP panel member fails to sign the IRP panel decision, the IRP panel member shall endeavor to provide a written statement of reason for the absence of such signature. End of Rule 12.
Thank you. Thanks, Bernie. Any comments, concerns, or questions there? It's a very short rule. Brenda, are you back? I see you say in chat that Caboose's line did not pick up. Are you back with us?
Yes, I am here.
Could I ask you to keep trying on a reasonable basis?
Certainly.
Thank you for all efforts to get him back with us.
Sure. Well, he hasn't joined at all. He always wants a dial out, so he had not responded to the invite, but as a courtesy, I do try to call out to him just in case.
Well, thank you. So, I did see him in Adobe for a while.
No, that was me dialing out to
him.
So I had to enter his name. When you see the little green arrow next to someone's telephone, that means they're being dialed out too. Just a little
kink
there. Okay, but I will try again.
Thank you very much. So then we will move on to Rule 13, form and effect of an IRP panel decision. A, IRP panel decisions shall be made in writing promptly by the IRP panel based on the documentation, supporting materials, and arguments submitted by the parties. B, the IRP panel decision shall specifically designate the prevailing party as to each claim. C, subject to Article 4, Section 4.3 of ICANN's bylaws, all IRP panel decisions shall be made public and shall reflect a well-reasoned application of how the dispute was resolved in compliance with ICANN's articles and bylaws, as understood in light of prior IRP panel decisions decided under the same or an equivalent prior version of the provision of the articles and bylaws at issue and norms of applicable law, period. End of Rule 13. Comments, questions, or concerns? and I see Caboose's name with a green arrow. So thank you, Brenda. Thanks for continuing to try.
You're welcome.
Any concerns with that rule? I don't see any hands or hear any comments, so we're going to go to Rule 14, Bernie.
David?
Yes, sorry.
David? I have my hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see it.
No problem. It's because I'm such a small guy in this. I was thinking when you were this that maybe we could address Malcolm's issue from the last meeting about ensuring that the decisions are posted in English. Maybe it would be a better place to put that in here.
Thanks, Bernie. And, yes, I forgot to do that tweak. I think I took that on, and I think that's a fair comment. Unless Malcolm has any concerns, I could add in here, and I'll put it on list, you know, some language that says probably under 13A, that it would be in English. And so, thank you. Thanks for that, Bernie. And by the way, that reminds me that compliments to Bernie for the decisions, action items, and requests report from the call. I think this, that works very well, that this whole process is working very well. So, Bernie, if you would mention that particular thing just to remind me. So we're over to Rule 14 then. And it's up to you, Bernie, on Rule 14.
Yes, sir. Appeal of IRP panel decisions. An IRP panel decision may be appealed to the full standing panel sitting en banc within 60 days of the issuance of such a decision. The en banc standing panel will review such appealed IRP decisions based on a clear error of judgment or the application of incorrect legal standard. The en banc standing panel may also resolve any disputes between panelists on an IRP panel or the procedures officer with respect to consolidation of claims or intervention. End of Rule 14.
Thank you, Bernie. And the same request, any concerns or comments, please speak up now. I don't see hands. And I don't hear anything, so we will proceed on to Rule 15. And I'm just looking one more time. Okay, Rule 15, costs. The IRP panel shall fix costs in its IRP panel decision, except as otherwise provided in Article 4, Section 4.3EII of ICANN's bylaws. Each party to an IRP proceeding shall bear its own legal expenses, except that ICANN shall bear all costs associated with the community IRP as defined in Article 4, Section 4.3D of ICANN's bylaws, including the cost of all legal counsel and technical experts. Except with respect to a community IRP, the IRP panel may shift and provide for the losing party to pay administrative costs and or fees of the prevailing party in the event it identifies the losing party's claim or defense as frivolous or abusive. End of Rule 15, and that's the end of the reading of the rules right now. Concerns or comments about that particular rule would be entertained now. And I'm looking for hands and or listening, and I don't hear or see anything. So, Brenda, I take it you're just not having any luck getting in touch with Caboose?
Correct, David. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, and thanks for trying. So we've gotten through the rules. We have some tweaks. We haven't identified any on this call with the exception of the one Bernie just mentioned about putting the language of the decision that Malcolm mentioned yesterday, Tuesday, into I think it was Section 13 that we just identified. So, Bernie, if you would note that in the DAIR report, I'll take a swat at that. But then we should move on to, as I mentioned in the agenda, to the suggested tweaks coming out of Tuesday's call. I see a hand, though. Malcolm's hand is up. So, Malcolm, go ahead and take the floor.
Oh, I was just going to offer some language now for the record, if you like, on the English copy thing, but I don't have to if you don't.
No, please go ahead. Please go ahead, and Bernie, if you would just take note of this.
Okay. The decision of the IRP panel shall be posted in English. If the decision is translated into other languages, the English language version shall be the authoritative text.
And thanks, Malcolm. And where would that appear?
That would appear in Article 13 under form of the decision. It says form and effect of the decision is the title of Article 13. So, and you pointed out that would be an appropriate place to put it, so that would be 13D.
Okay.
So the new subparagraph under that.
Thank you. So does anyone... I'm sorry. Malcolm, did you want to say something else?
Oh, I just think you're welcome.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Any concerns or comments with the suggested tweak that Malcolm just offered? And I don't see any hands. Malcolm, I take that to your old hand. And not hearing any. So, Barney, if you would kindly make a note of that, you can offer that tweak as discussed. And so, moving to tweaked language, in the interim between Tuesday's call and today's call, we very kindly got a comment from Kate. Thank you very much, Kate. And then also I sent an email to the list several hours ago about provisions that I said I would take. And so I'd like to start with mine first because I'd like to go in the order of them as they appear in the rules. And I offered a safe harbor language with respect to the 12-month limitation, time limitation in Rule 4, time for filing. And I'll read it here and then ask if anyone has any comments. Excuse me. And what I wrote and suggested was the following. During the pendency of these supplementary procedures as, quote, interim supplementary procedures, close quote, however, no claimant shall be time barred from submitting a written statement of a dispute due solely to passage of the 12 months period described in the second part of the immediately preceding sentence, it being understood that the IRP implementation oversight team continues its consideration of this aspect of such sentence for treatment in the supplementary procedures to follow in due course. Does anyone have any comments or concerns or questions? Sam, your hand is up. Go ahead.
Thanks, David. So I think we have, I know from the ICANN side we have some concern because, you know, if you go back to some of the principles that we put forth and how the IRP, the interim rules would work, it was to not make major changes to what was posted to public comment if they were still under significant deliberation by the IOT. And so with the change that you proposed to the caveat that's been proposed, that actually makes a significant change. I think that there is some room to tie back a date for a period of time to when the new bylaws went into effect. So what we don't want to do through this is to create the ability for someone who had a claim that was right before the bylaws went into effect but didn't take advantage of an IRP under the old bylaws to now still, you know, have the opportunity to come forward. So I think we can do something to time back to possibly October 1st, 2016, for a short period of time. I think maybe October, and then tether it back to the 120-day window. You know, through the footnote that we've offered, we've identified that if the repose period looks different in the final set of rules, ICANN would agree to putting in whatever transitional language would need to be put in to not time bar people who could have filed under a different timing of repose. So we've agreed that we're not going to prejudice people who have something that came up under this, who may have been able to file if the period of time was longer, if there was agreement that the period of time should be longer. That was our commitment. We put it into here. We stand by that. But I think that the language that you've offered is, it opens up far too much for, to allow people to go back really far, and the fact that it's not even tethered to the current form of the bylaws creates some concern for us.
Thanks, Sam. It's David speaking, and I put my hand up because I'm going to be speaking as a participant and not as the lead, and I should have mentioned that when I started speaking about this, because I offered that language as a participant, not as lead. And that's the way I was speaking about it on Tuesday's call. So let me make that part clear. I guess I have two comments. One is, you're right. You picked up on the fact that there may be claims from before, from the old bylaws, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't even think of that. So to the extent that that creates an issue, I would suggest that you come to the list with language. Come to the list with language on that. But then the second point I would make is what I'm trying to do is simply say that is to create a recognition that the IoT is discussing repose and that we've not decided on repose yet. And I thought that I was being consistent with what you had offered, you know, whenever you first offered it, that while we were deciding the issue, someone wouldn't be prejudiced on the second aspect of the time bar rule. It strikes me that we will probably finish, we will probably finish the repose rule insofar as sending something to the board prior to the end of the year, prior to getting a reconstituted, you know, or a bulked up IoT. At least I think that's reasonable. I mean, we've spoken about it so much that I sort of hearken back to the email that Malcolm sent in the middle of August saying, you know, there's three possible ways we can move forward on this. And so this may not really have any impact at all under the new bylaws. But having said all that, I would ask you to come to list with language that sort of builds on or just completely does away with what I did and make the statement, you know, actually put words there that we can parse. So that's my comment. Thank you very much. And I will then back as the lead. I'll recognize Malcolm. Your hand's up. You go ahead.
Thank you. I was going to note that Sam just said that ICANN was committed to make sure that people weren't prejudiced by this rule if this rule is subsequently changed in the final rules. That's great. So why don't we keep it simple and just say that? To say that that whether there should be this concept of repose is still under review, and that in the event that it is changed, we will introduce transitional language to ensure that nobody was continued to be prejudiced by the temporary adoption of this rule.
I'm sorry, I was on mute trying to talk through mute. So thank you, Malcolm. Sam, your hand's back up. Go ahead. But first, let me make a comment. I wasn't able to look at chat while I was speaking, Sam, and so I think what you're doing is providing language, which is fine, but I'm going to ask you to, after the call, whatever that language might be, is to put it on list as well. Anyway, so Sam, go ahead, your hand's up.
Thanks, David. I just wanted to level set a bit, because in the documents that were forwarded, I don't believe it came up well in what's projected on the screen, but in the documents that were forwarded, you'll note that there are very few footnotes in that document, but one of the footnotes that exists that we would suggest persist in the final version is a footnote that I've put the text into the chat on. And it states that the repose issue is still in effect, and it reflects ICANN's commitment to create transitional language so that other people wouldn't be prejudiced. The language is actually already out on the list. I put it back into the chat. And so if the group would be comfortable with that moving forward, you know, let us know. But I think it actually, Malcolm was actually basically outlining what this actually says. So I think, and he noted in chat that it works for him as well. So that might be a way that we can move forward.
Thanks, Sam. And it's David again. And you're right. When I created this suggested tweak, I didn't bring forward the footnotes, and perhaps I should have, but I didn't. So you're right to note that. Malcolm, your hand's up. Is that a new hand?
Apologies. That was the old hand.
Okay, thanks. So if it works for Sam and it works for Malcolm, I think it's going to work for me, and I would guess everybody else on the call, unless I see other hands. I don't. That sounds like a deal. So if I could I think it's a deal. I'll have to look at the record. Bernie, I'm going to look to you to sort of capture what the deal was, because I haven't been able to follow all of the chat while this has been going on. So thank you both. And so
David,
I'm sorry. Yes.
I guess my understanding of what we've just agreed to is basically that the text in the footnote that is currently in the document covers the concerns, and therefore we don't have to change anything versus the draft we've been looking at. Is that correct, Sam?
That's my understanding.
Thank you.
And I take it that's with the understanding that the footnote would be added back, or that it never went away. I just made a mistake in sort of putting back this tweak without the footnote. I think that's what you're saying. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you. So then I'm going to move on. Oh, no. Before I get to the Rule 7, going in sequence, I think Kate's suggested tweak is next, because if I'm not mistaken, had to do with Rule 6. And Kate, you're welcome to read it if you want. Otherwise, I would be happy to read it. I will let you decide.
Hi, David. Thanks. This is Kate for the record. I'm just going to try to find where I had the language. If you have it in front of you, that might be the easiest.
Okay. I'll go ahead. I have the language in front. Thank you.
Thanks.
I have the language in front of me. And so Kate made a suggestion, and this is with respect to the last paragraph in Rule Number 6. And the title of Rule Number 6 is Written Statements. And so I will read through it, and I will note when I get to language that Kate has suggested that we add. For any dispute resulting from a decision of process-specific expert panel, For any dispute resulting from a decision of a process-specific expert panel that is claimed to be inconsistent with ICANN's articles of incorporation or bylaws, as specified at bylaw section 4.3B, III, A3, any person, group, or entity that was previously identified as within a contention set with the claimant regarding the issue under consideration within such expert panel proceeding shall, and Kate suggests adding the word reasonably after shall reasonably receive notice from ICANN that the independent review process has commenced. ICANN shall, and Kate suggests adding the next four words, undertake reasonable efforts to. So that now reads, ICANN shall undertake reasonable efforts to provide notice by electronic message within 2 business days calculated at ICANN's principal place of business of receiving notification from the ICDR that the IRP has commenced, period, end of tweak. Do I hear any comments or concerns or questions? Or I don't see any hands or hear any. Thank you, Kate. And moving forward then, let's go on to Rule 7, consolidation, intervention, et cetera. And I suggested some tweaks in this yesterday, and I put language in it in the mail that I sent earlier. And so I will read that. I'm starting at the first paragraph of Rule 7, and I will skip certain portions if they're not impacted, and I'll mention that. But starting at the first paragraph, A procedures officer shall be appointed from the standing panel to consider any request for consolidation, intervention, and/or participation as an amicus. Here is where I suggest adding some verbiage, and what I added was, except as otherwise expressly stated herein, that's the end of my addition, requests for consolidation, intervention, and/or participation as an amicus are committed to the reasonable discretion, et cetera, et cetera. I then move over to add a paragraph in the section dealing with intervention. And I add it after the paragraph that begins, in addition, the supporting organizations which developed the consensus policy, et cetera, et cetera. And before the paragraph that begins, any person, group, or entity who intervenes as a claimant pursuant to this section will become a claimant, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what I added was the following. In addition, any person, group, or entity shall have a right to intervene as a claimant where, one, that person, group, or entity claims a significant interest relating to the subjects of the independent review process and adjudicating the independent review process in that person, group, or entity's absence might impair or impede that person, group, or entity's ability to protect such interest and, or two, where any question of law or fact that is common to all who are similarly situated as that person, group, or entity is likely to arise in the independent review process. The next change I made was in the very paragraph after the next one, which begins, any person or group or entity who intervenes as a claimant pursuant to this section will become a claimant. In the next paragraph, I add the following introductory language. Excluding materials exempted from production under Rule 8, exchange of information below, the IRP panel shall direct, et cetera, et cetera. And then the other change I made is in Rule 8, exchange of information. I'll read them together since they seem to be related to me, and then I'll get to the hands. Well, no, before I get to Rule 8, let me go ahead and recognize the hands that are up. I see Bernie, Malcolm, and Sam. Bernie, why don't I ask you to tell us who was first?
The order looks like Malcolm, then Sam.
Okay, and Malcolm, go ahead.
Okay, I'm speaking in relation to Rule 7. Thank you for these suggestions, David. I support them. In relation to Rule 8, I don't have a view on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Sam.
Thanks, David. This is Sam Eisner for the record. So the places where you interlineated small additions, we're fine with those. But we do have I have some concerns about the section, the full paragraph that was added that said, in addition, any group, person, group, or entity shall have a right to intervene as a claimant. We might want to move that. I don't think we'd have as much concern if we move that into an amicus status. But one of the things that we had talked about many times as we were going over this was the fact that claimant has a very specific definition under the bylaws, and only those people who are not just impacted by the action but are impacted because they allege that ICANN itself violated its articles or bylaws, those are the only people who qualify as a claimant. And this, and having just a significant interest relating to it, doesn't actually require that someone have an IRP claim against ICANN. It does recognize that they have an interest in what's going on. And I think we don't have any concern with allowing those people to be part of a proceeding, but giving them claimant status gives them certain rights under the bylaws that actually opens up the IRP to be used in ways that it's not anticipated to if they don't meet the requirement that they are alleging a violation that ICANN violated the bylaws. Because we could see people who actually support the action that ICANN took, who would have the interest and would qualify under this paragraph, but they wouldn't meet the status of claimant. And so they would be forced to make statements as to what ICANN did in violation of its bylaws, but they actually wouldn't believe that ICANN violated their bylaws. They might be, let's just, you know, take the common example right now. If they were a competing applicant who received the benefit of ICANN's decision, they're actually not going to want to say that ICANN violated its bylaws in taking that decision, where the claimant is taking that position. So we're requiring people to take positions that they wouldn't take by this. So I think we could move that down either to amicus. So I think we put some things into the amicus section that covered this type of interest in a proceeding. And I'd say this is one of those things that we should bookmark and put more attention to before we get to a final set of rules, if there's a wish to change the scope of who can participate in an IRP.
Thanks, Sam. Malcolm, you have your hand back. Oh, I'm sorry, before I go to you, Malcolm. Bernie, you initially had your hand up. Did you have something that you wanted to say?
Nope.
Thanks. Malcolm, you have your hand back up. Go ahead.
Thank you. Sam makes a fair point, but it's quite limited in its nature. It just points out that some people might not want to be a claimant. They might want only to be an amicus, and that might be appropriate for their claim. So I think this could be easily resolved and better honor your proposal by leaving your proposal intact, but where it says to intervene as a claimant, to say to intervene as an amicus or as a claimant, open parentheses, as appropriate to their position, close parentheses, and then continue. And that would leave it as the option to the person to intervene as an amicus. And they would also be entitled to intervene as a claimant if they had a claim.
Thanks, Malcolm. I didn't put my hand up, but I'm speaking now as a participant, you know, as the person that suggested this. And so I hear you, Sam, and I'd be willing to look at language. It's possible that Malcolm just provided it. But if it was moved to an amicus thing, I would like to look at the language that you come up with, and you can probably tell between this and Rule 8 where I'm coming from is a competitive situation where, you know, members of contracted party houses or others who have contracts with ICANN or others who have contracts that are affected by ICANN have to be able to protect their interest in competitive situations. And so I used language that largely followed U.S. federal rules of procedure. But those rules are fairly, I think, at least in common law countries, fairly routinely accepted that someone has an interest can defend themselves. You know, they can't look for the defendant to make their argument for them. And so I think that Malcolm may just have given us the language. But, Sam, if you would take a swat at what you want to do with this and then put it on list, I would certainly take a look at it.
I have a new hand.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't see it.
This is actually an issue that we discussed even as we were developing the bylaws themselves with Sidley. And this is where the IRP differs from regular litigation, because the IRP has very limited standing rules. The IRP has a very narrow aspect to it. And so we can look at the language and we can try to make some recommendations. I understand where Malcolm is coming from with the choice of the amicus versus claimant. I think that it's very important that if we have a right for someone to come as a claimant, language such as significant interest here doesn't align with the standing requirements of the bylaws, which require an allegation of material harm. And so that might be where we make some changes to that. But if we have I understand on the whole that this is an issue that we need to make more progress on for as the IOT before we have a final set of rules. If we are not able to completely satisfy, because I think that there definitely is room to put in some language to account for a bit broader of a representation than is currently within these rules. I hear that. I see that. I think we can do something quickly on the interim rules to get there. But will there be a point that we could agree that we could get a set of interim rules in place so that we have something? Because from our standpoint, from the ICANN org side, we're getting very nervous that we are on the precipice of having IRPs filed for which we don't have an adequate set of procedures that meet the bylaws. And so we have that pressure. And so you're hearing from me kind of the dual pressures. I want to work with the IOT. I want to help get this right. I want to help these items be reflected appropriately in the rules. But I also think that it's essential for the protection of the organization and everything that this group has worked so hard to do so far to get a set of rules in place quickly. So I'm just wondering where that balance is. I will come back on list with some proposals of how to integrate some of these ideas into the set of interim rules. But I also would ask that there be some commitment to getting it even more right in a final set of rules, if we could move to that.
Thanks, Sam. Malcolm, you have your hand back up. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to give a quick clarification for Sam so that she knows that we're not as far apart as maybe she might think we are. I'm not suggesting, I'm not speaking for you, David, but for me, I'm not suggesting for a moment that we should allow the language in this paragraph to change who is qualified to be a claimant. All that this paragraph is intending to say is that if you are otherwise qualified to be a claimant, if you additionally satisfy the situation described in this paragraph, you should be able to intervene as a claimant as of right, rather than wait for another another case. Similarly, if you don't qualify as a claimant, but you've satisfied the conditions in this paragraph, you should be allowed to intervene as an amicus as of right, and it shouldn't be merely discretionary on the part of the procedures officer. So that's the aim, but not to change the definition of who qualifies as a claimant. That should be untouched by this language.
Thanks, Malcolm. And I will also make a comment as a participant, Sam. I think that I can live with what Malcolm has just said. I think he's right in what he's saying, and I think that it's quite possible that we could crack this nut with amicus status, as long as it's not discretionary. It is a matter of right, and as long as the amicus could protect their interest as described in the language I did. But, and I noticed too that Bernie gave us a time check. We're running out of time for this call. But it makes, that actually gets to the point that I agree with you, Sam. We have to finish this, and so we have to get through this. And I think that's one reason Bernie and I scheduled two calls this week, is to try and get through this, get the interim rules out. We recognize that the time has come to get interim rules out. You know, we have to move to repose, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I feel those pressures myself. And so what I'd like to do is close discussion on this one, ask you, Sam, to come back with your amicus language. I would just mention to you that I think, you know, I agree with what Malcolm just said. I think that will work, but I'd like to look at the language. And then I'd like to move on to Rule 8 now, unless there's any other comment. Malcolm, your hand, is that a new hand or an old hand? Must be an old hand. So if I don't see any other hands, then let's move on to Rule 8. I'll mention what I tweaked with respect to Rule 8, and it is in the second paragraph of Rule 8, down near the end. And but this is one sentence, an incredibly long sentence. I'll read it, and then I'll mention the parenthetical that I suggest added at the end. On the motion of either party and upon finding by the IRP panel that such exchange of information is necessary to further the purposes of the IRP, the IRP panel may order a party to produce to the other party and to the IRP panel if the moving party requests. Documents or electronically stored information in the other party's possession, custody, or control that the panel determines are reasonably likely to be relevant material to the resolution of the claims and or defenses in the dispute and are not subject to attorney-client privilege, the work product doctrine, or otherwise protected from disclosure by applicable law, including with, and here's what I'm adding, suggesting to add, including without limitation, disclosures to competitors of the disclosing person, group, or entity of any competition-sensitive information of any kind, period. And so the floor is open on that for comments, questions, concerns. I don't see or hear any. We are basically coming up to the end of this call. So let me try and wrap things up this way. There are some suggested tweaks identified here that I will ask to come to list. But I think by and large, we as a group have gone through the rules pretty comprehensively, and we will finish this topic on list, I believe, and hopefully we can do that prior to the beginning of ICANN 63. I will be back on list early in the week with whatever administrative things I think I need to attend to, and I'll certainly look for your language, Sam, and take a look at it. And I want to thank everybody for being here. Once we get these rules done, we'll turn to repose, and I would encourage everyone to consider the public comments. The only mail that I can recall was Malcolm's mail from the middle of August suggesting three possible ways forward. I would suggest reading that again. I have been requested to give some comments along with others at ICANN 63. I've sent those slides around. If you have any concerns, please let us know. I see two hands as we wrap up. Sam, it looks like you're first. Why don't you go ahead?
Sure. So I wanted to raise two items. First, I wanted to give a heads up to the group that in anticipation of the IoT being able to complete the set of interim rules, we are putting onto the board's agenda for their meeting at the end of Barcelona the board's consideration of the interim rules to get them approved because there is a step for board approval. So we'll coordinate with the appropriate committees and all, given that the rules are not yet finalized, but the board is waiting to see that. And on a personal note, I just wanted to note my thanks for how we've really worked together as a group to get to this interim set of rules. I know we're really appreciative from the ICANN side because having the set of rules in place, I think will be of benefit to everyone. And I know we still have more work to do. In terms of the rules, there was one other action item that I was aware of, which Malcolm and I were charged with going and looking at some language on translation. And so, Malcolm, I don't know if you want to report on what we had agreed upon. I think we have one change that we had agreed we'd take out the and ICANN or and claim. I forget which one, but we have a place that we had agreed that maybe we take out some language, but otherwise we wouldn't reflect any additional language in there, though Malcolm and I have agreed that there is a need to continue looking as we're doing the final set of rules to see if there are any caveats we need to include to appropriately reflect the times when ICANN is choosing to make translations available to the community, particularly those that aren't used in the IRP, so that there's better understanding around the community. And we agree that those are not things that are appropriately charged to either party as administrative or legal costs, and those really are things that are sunk as operational costs with ICANN. But we'll make sure that concept of a choice to make translations that are really for the benefit of the community and not for essentially for use in the IRP are not things that will be appropriately charged to the parties as IRP-related costs. So, Malcolm, if you can correct whatever I said that might have been wrong in there, please go ahead.
No, that was fine, other than that I thought that we'd agree to leave the text unchanged with no amendments pending that discussion.
That's better.
Essentially, David, we got to the position where now I think Sam and I are now completely on the same page as to what we want this to achieve. Sam's view for now was that maybe it doesn't actually need any change at all, and I'm content that we come back to this to check that and to confirm that when we come to the final rules, it needn't hold up these emergency rules. But provided we can come back to this and confirm that, and that the language is actually achieving what I now believe we both are seeking to achieve, then I'm happy to defer it for now.
Thanks, Sam and Malcolm. Do you two feel there's anything that needs to be written down and put on lists so that people are aware of this, or is it just that you've worked through it and we're sort of at the status quo that we were the other day and we do not need to come with a new – sorry, hold on just one second. And that we may not need to come up with something to put on list.
David, as a courtesy to those that are on the list that aren't attending the meeting, I'd be happy to put out my own statement that I'm happy to defer this, and these are the reasons why I'm happy to defer the point that I raised.
Okay, you might run it past Sam or whatever, but that sounds good.
Sure.
Thank you.
Absolutely, but I mean, it was a point that I raised, and I'm essentially retracting it for now. Yeah, deferring
okay.
It for now. So it's probably better, most proper coming from me that it's so shows that I was content to take back my own point.
Thank you. Thank you both. And it's probably a good idea to let the group know because we're going to finish this on list, and we'll finish it pretty quickly, I believe. I think we've pretty much gotten through this in pretty good shape. So thanks everybody for your attention on that. So I think we can just go ahead and wrap up the call. I'm going to ask if anyone has any final comments. I see, Malcolm, you have a hand up, I guess. Is that old or new? It's old. So if anyone has any comments, please let them make them now. Otherwise, what I will say is what I'm going to say in my next email is please pay attention to the list. You'll see things coming out, not much, but things to wrap this up and put it in shape that it can be given to the board. As per what Sam just told us. And so my sincere thanks to Bernie for arranging and Brenda for helping us and for all attending the last 2 days. 2 meetings in 3 days is good for this group, so I'm very appreciative. Having said all that, I will say this is the end of the call. To those who are going to Barcelona, I'm looking forward to seeing you there, and I'm thankful to all for your contributions. And so that's it for me. I'll say goodbye. And we can stop the recording.